Let's read together Acts chapter 17, verses 16 through 34. In the second half of Acts 17, we have the account of Paul's first visit to Athens and his address to the council known as the Areopagus. Acts 17, beginning at verse 16. Now, while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw that the city was given over to idols. Therefore, he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and with the Gentile worshipers, and in the marketplace daily with those who happened to be there. Then certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him, and some said, "What does this babbler want to say?" Others said, "He seems to be a proclaimer of foreign gods, because he preached to them Jesus and the resurrection." And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, "May we know what this new doctrine is of which you speak? For you are bringing some strange things to our ears. Therefore, we want to know what these things mean." For all the Athenians and the foreigners who were there spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or to hear some new thing. Then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you, God who made this world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, since he gives life to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as also some of your own poets have said, 'For we are also his offspring.' Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, something shaped by art and man's devising. Truly, these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed a day on which he will judge this world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead. And when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, while others said, 'We will hear you again on this matter.' So Paul departed from among them. However, some men joined him and believed. Among them, Dionysius, the Areopagite, a woman named Damaris, and others with them." Let's begin our study of this portion of Acts 17 with some background notes. In Acts chapter 17, we read of three cities visited by the Apostle Paul and the team on Paul's second missionary journey. The three cities were Thessalonica, Berea, and now Athens. In each of these cities, there was a different reaction to the gospel. At Thessalonica, there was open hostility by the unbelieving Jews because they were jealous when a number of Jews and Gentiles believed. At Berea, there was a much more receptive attitude by the Jews in the synagogue there. In fact, we read in verse 11 that these were more fair-minded or noble than those in Thessalonica, in that they received the word with all readiness and searched the scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so. As a result, many in Berea believed, and there was no opposition there at Berea until the unbelieving Jews from Thessalonica arrived, dogging the steps of the Apostle Paul. They arrived and stirred up the crowd. Now at Athens, Paul was confronted with indifference, skepticism, and ridicule, and only a relatively few became believers, and no church was formed. Three different cities with different reactions. You know, we will find these same different reactions to the presentation of the gospel today. Hostility, indifference, skepticism, ridicule, as well as openness and reception. In most situations, we will find all of these mixed reactions. So what do we do when we meet with negative reactions to our preaching and sharing and witnessing? Well, we do exactly what the Apostle Paul did. We keep the faith and just keep plugging along, and depend on the Lord to give open doors and positive responses to our witness. Our responsibility is to be a good witness. And that brings us to our doctrine or teaching points for this half of Acts chapter 17. We have three doctrinal points, and all three are characteristics of a good witness. We see all three of these characteristics in Paul's witness at Athens. So doctrinal point number one, a good witness shares with everyone. A good witness shares with everyone. When Paul came to Athens, he went first to the synagogue, as was his custom, and reasoned with the Jews and the God-fearing Gentiles based on the Old Testament scriptures. But Paul did not confine his witness to his ready-made audience in the synagogue. He also went to the agora, or marketplace, and witnessed to anyone who happened to be present and would listen to him. Verse 17, once again. Therefore, he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and with the Gentile worshipers and in the marketplace daily with those who happened to be there. This was street corner evangelism. Paul witnessed to everyone. When you witness to everyone, you're bound to get a few philosopher types in your audience along the way. Such was the case with the Apostle Paul at Athens. Verse 18. Then certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him. And some said, what does this babbler want to say? Others said, he seems to be a proclaimer of foreign gods because he preached to them Jesus and the resurrection. The Epicureans taught that pleasure was the chief end of life. And there's certainly a lot of Epicureans around today, isn't there? Paul witnessed to the Epicureans. The Stoic philosophers were pantheistic in their thinking and emphasized that there should be total control over the emotions so that one was unmoved by either pleasure or pain. Paul witnessed to the Stoics. Paul witnessed to everyone, even though some ridiculed him and called him a babbler, and others said that he proclaimed strange deities. But in spite of this verbal abuse, Paul continued to witness to everyone. A good witness shares with everyone. Doctrinal point number two. A good witness looks for common ground. A good witness looks for common ground. When they brought Paul before the Areopagus, he looked for something of common interest so that he could be a witness here as well. The Areopagus, by the way, was a government council in charge of religious and educational matters. They met at a hill near the Acropolis named Ares. In fact, that is the meaning of Areopagus in Greek, Hill of Ares, or Mars Hill, as in the King James Version. You know, you can stand on that hill today and get a good view of the many ruins of ancient Athens. Paul looked for a point of contact with the Athenians where he could begin his witness, and he found it. In this city of idols, he found an altar with the inscription, "To the Unknown God." Paul used this contact point as a jumping-off point to begin his witness for the one true God. Then Paul moved to the common ground of creation. Verse 24, God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. I imagine Paul gestured at this point toward the Parthenon on the Acropolis. The Parthenon was a temple to the goddess Athena. Verse 25, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. You know, this is really the causal argument that Paul is using here. You can't get something from nothing. There must be a cause, and that cause must be greater than its effect. If there is life and breath, then the cause must be a living creator. That's the causal argument that he's using here. You know, in witnessing, you can always find common ground with the causal argument. Just talking about the origin of this natural world in general is common ground. This is called general revelation. And it declares the glory of God. Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Psalm 19, 1. Then Paul moved on to the common ground of the origin of different peoples and nations. Even the Athenians could agree that this pointed back to a beginning with one man and one woman. This certainly was evidence of a creator, and therefore we are his offspring. There's the causal argument again. Paul even used the common ground of quotations from their own Greek poets to back up his argument. He concluded this part of his address by saying, "It was just not logical to worship the God who created everything, including us, with metal and stone images that we create ourselves." That's really not logical. In fact, it's ignorant. Now Paul was going to move on to the gospel, but the point here is that he started his address to the pagan Athenians with the common ground of origins. You can always find some common ground with anyone. A good witness looks for common ground. Doctrine point number 3. A good witness moves on to the gospel. A good witness moves on to the gospel. Paul did not stop with the common ground of creation and general revelation. He moved on to special revelation, that man was held accountable for sin, and that there would be a day of judgment. And there was proof of what he was preaching in that a certain man was raised from the dead. Now, Paul certainly must have shared more details of the gospel because we see in the last verse that some became believers, right? Verse 34, however, some men joined him and believed, among them Dionysius the Areopagite, a woman named Damaris, and others with them. Our point here is that in our witness, we must move on to the gospel as Paul did, and not just talk about the wonders of creation and other common ground subjects. Evangelism does not take place until a person hears and understands the gospel. A good witness moves on to the gospel. What about practical application from this portion of Acts chapter 17? Are you willing to be called a babbler? Are you willing to be called a babbler? Verse 18 once again. And some said, "What does this babbler want to say?" Have you ever been called a babbler? The word babbler here means seed picker. They were accusing Paul of picking up little bits of truth and knowledge here and there and putting his own spin on things. It was really ridicule and scorn. Well, let me tell you, they are not sneering now. In view of these eternal realities and truth and service to the Lord, Paul did not get turned off and stop his witness. What about us? Would we have packed it in at this point? In Hosea chapter 9, verse 7, we read, "The prophet is a fool. The spiritual man is insane because of the greatness of your iniquity and great enmity." The spiritual and moral conditions in Israel during Hosea's day were so bad that the true prophets who were inspired by God and the godly people were considered fools and out of their minds relative to the gross iniquity that was going on in Israel at that time. The prophets and God-fearing people who spoke up for the Lord appeared to be crazy babblers. You know, the same is true today in many areas of our society. Christian students who dare to take a stand in line with biblical truth and moral standards on the secular campus are considered deluded babblers. Christian writers who take the Christian worldview in secular publications are dismissed as ignorant babblers. This is not easy to take, and many Christians hide their faith as a result. Let me ask you, are you willing to be called a babbler?